This is episode 341 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 18th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last week saw the short messaging social network Twitter turn five. How it seems like Twitter has been with us forever. 5 years ago, on July the 15th, 2006, Twitter, then called Twitter, opened to the public and was described as a new mobile service that helps groups of friends bounce random thoughts around on SMS. It's time to look back over the last financial quarter and see how the major tech icons are placed. Last week saw Google's 36% revenue surge smash Wall Street's expectations, sending the internet giant's shares up more than 12%. The world's largest internet search engine turned in a strong quarterly profit that exceeded forecasts, as it benefited from growth in businesses ranging from mobile to online video. Shares of Google were up 12.3% at $594.50 US in aftermarket trading, marginally above the levels at which the stock began earlier this year. After 5 months of jagged ups and downs, Apple's stock overtook a record set on February the 16th, 2011. Last week, after hitting an intraday high of $365, the stock closed at $364.92 US, up $7.15, which is 2%. The previous high close of $363.13 were both set nearly 5 months ago on February the 16th. When it came to product shipments in the last quarter, Apple and Lenovo PCs made huge gains while those by HP and Dell remained flat. Shipments by Acer, formerly the world's second largest PC maker, fell 22%, placing it in fourth spot, while Lenovo's shipments jumped 22.5%. Lenovo was the third largest computer maker in the world, behind Dell and Hewlett-Packard. Apple's PC shipments to the US grew 8% to 1.8 million, defying the weak consumer market in the US, while shipments by leaders HP and Dell fell 1.2% and 9.8% respectively on last year's figures. According to research firm Gartner and IDC, Apple had just over a 10% share of the US PC market. However, it remained outside the top five across the world.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Apple compensates a user for iPhone tracking. Also, the company aligns Australian App Store prices with that of the United States. A door knocker offers fake NBN services in Hobart. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has published a draft report on the findings of its inquiry into telco customer care and complaints. Adam has a view from the hammock and a special birthday mention to a well-known tech company who just turned five. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, speculation that Amazon might have its sights set on Australia. A digital radio system for Melbourne's trains faces a $30 million cost blowout. Electronic Arts buys social game developer PopCap for $750 million. Scammers cash in on NBN uncertainty. And pricing in Apple's Australian iTunes has now hit parity with the United States. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Online retail juggernaut Amazon Web Services is believed to be looking at Sydney to host a number of data centres by early next year. AWS is the cloud computing arm of Amazon and has been canvassing the local data centre market for power-efficient facilities. Its Australian business officially launched in April, offering cloud computing services primarily from a Singapore-based data hub. But now it's believed that AWS wants to partner with an Australian company to better serve Australian customers. Amazon began in 1995 as an online bookstore. Today, the company offers cloud infrastructure services for storage, retail, and payment systems. A digital radio system for Melbourne's Metropolitan Rail Network faces a cost blowout of up to $31 million, according to Victorian Public Transport Minister, Mr. Terry Mulder. The 2008 contract was awarded to Nokia Siemens to build a private GSM-R mobile telephone network for Melbourne's railways. The system would be built on GSM technology, according to an international standard tailored for high-speed rail transport, and would have the capacity to carry voice, data and video between train control staff and drivers. But Mr. Mulder last week said the revised project cost would be up to $166.3 million, which is $31.4 million above the 2006-2007 budget allocation made under the previous Labor state government. IT News reported that additional costs now included $6.1 million for software development, $5.2 million for in-cab installation works, $2.1 million in additional hardware, and $1.5 million to compensate for delays. Games powerhouse Electronic Arts has announced it is buying rival PopCap Games, maker of popular titles like Bejeweled and Plants vs. Zombies. EA announced last week it will pay $650 million in cash and $100 million in common stock to shareholders of PopCap. Chief Executive Officer of Electronic Arts, Mr. John Ricciatello, said PopCap's great studio talent and powerful IP add to EA's momentum and accelerate our drive towards a $1 billion digital business. PopCap has been described as a social and casual gaming specialist, writing games for social networks like Facebook, as well as smartphones and games consoles. EA's purchase of PopCap is expected to be finalised by August. The Department of Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy last week released a warning about scammers attempting to cash in on the National Broadband Network after reports of bogus door-to-door salespeople trying to sign up consumers in Tasmania. Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy said in a media release on Friday that a number of reputable retail service providers were offering commercial services over the NBN in Tasmania, including iiNet, Internode, Exatel, iPrimus and Telstra. Mr. Conroy said that people can protect themselves from scams by applying common sense rules, asking for appropriate identification and ensuring appropriate checks are made. Mr. Conroy encouraged people who believed they were targeted by bogus salesmen to report the matter to the government's ScamWatch website. And pricing in the Australian Apple iTunes store has hit parity with the United States for the first time. Despite the strength of the Australian dollar against the greenback for many months, Apple has only just adjusted pricing down for Australians, meaning applications that used to cost $1.19 in Australia now cost 99 cents, in essence the same as in the United States. Popular Australian tech blog Lifehacker reports that there's no change on the music or movies front, presumably reflecting the fact that Apple has different local deals with individual labels, but deals with developers on an international level. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
We're just hanging out, if you know
what
I mean.
We are hanging out, aren't we? This is new. This is the Google Plus Hangout.
There's currently on Steam 1,000 games for under $10.
Facebook launches video chat with Skype.
I thought Google owned all the disk space.
There's a lot of people think, oh no, it's going to be appearing on.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't do that.
This is going to make for a very boring radio show.
It is. On that.
All right, I'll make a public Twitter account.
Lies and slander.
Lies and slander.
Forgot you weren't in that part of my brain.
The rise of online movie services was meant to kill off the video store, but it seems they're not in a hurry to die.
In 2013, 75% of all cinemas in the world will be digital.
Can anyone identify the router?
Beer, pizza and portal.
That's it.
And bacon.
Oh, bliss.
Oh,
bliss. Absolute bliss.
We could have an email address for a Twitter account for you all to follow.
Being born, look.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's a boy.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, yes, and happy birthday to Twitter. Happy
Yay.
Birthday to Twitter. It turned 5 last week.
Aww.
And it was just a tumultuous time, really, because 5 years later, the one and only Graham Callaghan gave birth to a 52-follower Twitter account.
Has he got 52 followers already?
I just logged in then and clicked his little mugshot there in the top right-hand corner of my Twitter account, and there he is, 52 of the best following. And who said it would never work, Graham?
Well, I think it's yet to be seen.
How many tweets have you done now? 4.
Out of control. Two words.
I think we should celebrate somehow when he cracks the double digits, when he hits 10, probably in about September, October. We should do an OB or something.
It's even on my most frequently opened tabs.
It is. That's impressive.
Anyway, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is front and centre. To his right, camera left, is Lena Van Deventer.
Hello.
And on the other side, just a figure of speech, Graham. Relax.
Sorry.
And Graham is here in this evening. So welcome, everybody, wherever you might happen to be around this wonderful planet of ours. And you can come and join us in the chat room, too. There's lots of people there, including Dr. Ron's fan club, I noticed this evening.
I know.
What's going on, Dr. Ron?
I know. It's on nothing.
Nothing.
Come and join We Love Dr. Ron and everybody else in the chat room. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are if you're listening live.
It's your mum listening tonight. Yeah. What?
I'm not responsible.
Oh, dear. Anyway, it's been a fairly, how's your father type week in tech this week. So I think the games have been a little bit better, you gamers over there. But all I can say is that it's been a very financial week. Lots of results from all these, because it's the end of their quarter over there. And anyway, we've got all those stats out during the course of the week. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a bit about Google Plus, because it keeps on going from strength to strength. What are we up to now? Hasn't even been around for a month yet, and a lot of people talking about it. And what else has happened this week? Microsoft made a little bit of a social networking slip, which we'll talk about.
And, did they?
Yeah, and a few odd spotty sort of things that have come across. I saw having a bit of a chuckle about what the Kiwis are up to at the moment with their ISPs and infringements of copyright. But we'll talk about that later. Odd spot gadget website of the week.
What sort of stuff. Oh, yeah, I panicked then for a moment.
You know what we should do one day is roll the show backwards. That'll confuse people, wouldn't it? We'll put the news at the end and we'll put the odd spot gadget website of the week at the top of the show.
It would confuse the hell out of us in here, if
not to mention
else.
A few people at radio stations around the countryside. Anyway, Dr. Ron, correspondence. I'm sure you have some.
Of course I have some. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
How's your mail working, by the way? There was an issue this afternoon. You were complaining that no one loved you. Yeah. No one was sending you email. Did you sort that out?
No.
Okay.
No.
Dr. Ron needs email. Guy, send him some.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that. That'll really make things better.
I'll sign you up for...
Yeah, that's right. This is my email address when you're signing up.
I didn't say your email address. They can work it out.
You had email problems on Friday.
Oh, don't stop there.
Don't mention the war.
No, I had an update came down at 5:45 on Thursday afternoon and absolutely destroyed a server. Anyway, that's another story.
It is.
Tech nightmares. But it's good now. All the better for it, I think.
Yeah. Clean installation.
Freshy.
If anyone mentions the name of a Microsoft mail server product, I'll strangle them tonight. So,
you see, Graham's had in that mood. Problems about a Microsoft mail server product, which we now can't name as well.
Really? Is it the Big E?
No,
you be careful.
Be careful. Sorry, I'm still 10 letters away.
He has a very negative outlook on it.
Oh, I think, yes. I think the Big O is the client and the Big E is the server.
Yes.
It's the Big E we have to avoid mentioning.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Former Tech Talk Radio US correspondent Mark Diggins says via email,
hello, Mark.
Woohoo.
I saw that.
Or as Lena would say,
woohoo.
QuickFlix signs digital distribution deal with Sony Australia. Online DVD rental firm QuickFlix's busy... That's hard to say. QuickFlix's. QuickFlix's busy fortnight continues with the news it has signed an agreement with Sony Australia to provide a subscription movies streaming service.
Oh, not another one.
The deal will see QuickFlix stream movies to all Sony Bravia internet video-connected televisions, SBIV-capable Blu-rays and home theatres. Do you know what that means?
I think it's something to do with the web-enabled Blu-rays.
Okay.
The blue, you know how you can, they all do that, they talk on the internet thing.
Yeah, when you're watching them, when you put them in the
you
player.
Get it's like your Bravia, what they call it, the crossbar menu system. You get that also on some Blu-ray players.
All righto. And home theatres and VIO computers in Australia.
What about PlayStations? I'm sure it'll pop up there.
It should. It doesn't mention PlayStations, but it should.
It will. It'll be in the crossbar. It'll be in the video where you select your iTunes. iView and Channel 7's one and SBS's. And
TV bar.
Is that what it's called?
I think so. Yep. Last week, says Mark, the news broke that Telstra would shift its Big Pond Movies DVD customers over to QuickFlix in return for a variable payment based on the number of transferred customers. Well, the firm announced its new CEO, former Telstra media director Chris Taylor, on Monday.
Isn't he in the Chaser?
Regards, Mark. Chris Taylor?
Yeah.
He could be.
It's a very familiar name.
Have you seen all the Chaser guys in the credits of the Lawrence Leung's program?
Oh,
Unbelievable.
They?
Yeah.
Are they helping write it?
They're writing and producing. So that's what they're busy doing at the moment.
Show.
That's a great show. Mm. Have a look at that on ABC iView on Catch Up.
Julie says Crossbar Media. Thank you, Julia. Julie.
Julie. Sorry. Thanks, Julie, in the chat room. Carl, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, says, hi, team. Carl again. Another great show this week, and the interview with James Gardner was fascinating. More interviews like that, please. Thanks, Carl. It was good having James
on
the
program
last week.
Yeah, we talked about the future of cinema.
Digital
cinema. 2013, he said. No more film.
No more film.
Big call.
I just wanted to pick up on the digital downloads piece by Adam. I guess I'm one of those pesky customers, as Adam called us, who aren't ready to switch to downloads. I do have an Apple TV and use it sometimes, but I have two major problems with it. First is cost. A movie rental's about $6 and only lasts 48 hours, whilst a DVD rental from QuickFlix or Telstra works out at around $2.50 and can keep it as long as you want.
Yeah, there's all sorts of business models out there, isn't there, for all the different types of companies?
Absolutely. More important, says Carl, is quality. The Apple TV is only 720p and looks okay, better than standard DVD, but no streaming service or internet connection can come close.
A newie coming.
To Blu-ray.
The newie coming. 1080 on the Apple TV in the not-too-distant.
Is that right? Going to replace the
7... Yeah, but how are we going to get streaming content to look anything like as good as a Blu-ray looks? That's the problem.
This is Carl's point.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's valid, but once again, it all comes down to codecs and compression and stuff like that. And I guess it relies on image stability, as in not moving very quickly. If you pan across something which has got a lot of detail, it's going to fall apart.
That's no good saying that, because...
Yeah, but they'll come out with good quality codecs and things in time.
We won't be able to watch any past action movies, and we'll have to have strict rules on directors not to pan too quickly or have too much action in the shot.
No, you can still get your Blu-ray.
Hmm.
You can, trust me. But then again, if you go and have a look at Vimeo.com, Vimeo is like a YouTube, but it's only for professionals. So they've got a really nice codec up there, and they tell you how to encode for HD. And it looks very nice, very spiffy on the big screen televisions, and it streams very well. And that's on standard broadband. It's not on fiber, not on NBN yet.
Well, I'm trying to watch catch-up TV standard definition programs on iView or on the SBS catch-up TV service, and they're stopping and starting and carrying on, and they're blocky and horrible-looking, and it can't keep up with enough bandwidth to do that.
There's something in the path. Have a look at Vimeo. Seriously, good stuff.
Carl says, this is sadly where quality versus convenience, or the race to the bottom, as I call it, will eventually see streaming win.
Carl's spot on.
As MP3s have won over CD. I don't know about Adam, but I didn't buy a full HD plasma and Blu-ray player just to go back to watching blocky compressed streaming, which I can assure you looks pretty ordinary on a big screen when you're used to Blu-ray. That's what you're saying, Graham.
That's exactly it.
At the end of the day, it's horses for courses, but I hope there will always be a place for Blu-ray discs or other full HD delivery systems for those of us who value
Quality. Have to be a Blu-ray disc. They just have to have something that
you just need
can
a file.
Do that quality.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't get me started on HD free-to-air TV. Kind regards, Carl.
No. What HD free-to-air TV? Not in this country.
Yeah, the upscaled old episodes of MacGyver in 4:3 look really good on the HD TV channel.
Gilligan's Island and
Bewitched.
Yeah, Bewitched. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And Happy Days, you know, they chop the heads off. Have you seen that?
Yes.
The TV stations take it upon themselves to take something which is already 4:3, it's just the old boxy square format.
Yep.
Then they zoom in on it so that it stretches out to fill, so they don't get black on the sides of their screens. Mm. And as a result, people lose their heads.
And the quality goes down because they're zooming in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last but certainly not least, long-time contributor GJMCN via the feedback form says, last week's show had a real Blue Monday theme happening, as in the New Order song. Adam Turner's streaming and Lena's the streaming versus physical media touched on a theme. So we're getting a lot of feedback about this, aren't we?
Yes, we have touched a nerve.
We have touched a nerve. Adam and your guest are right. There is a digital divide forming, and not just between the first and third worlds. The content is big and will only get bigger, and the bandwidth is growing, but against demand, it's getting smaller faster. Even in the US and Canada, where Netflix appears to be the successful model, the model Telstra et al. Failed to run with, capping is now becoming the new black. I like that. Capping's now the new black. It's very good. Having captured the content at the ISP or platform, the studios are now leaning and squeezing out stores and distributors for popular content. Gaming is heading that way, to where once streaming is dominant, the producers will just ease back on the tap and step on the pricing. from the US, shaping, net neutrality, geo-blocking and intellectual property debates are all falling in favour of the studios. We're seeing a global convergence of industry-offered internet capping growing in the US and bigger US limits growing there. Cheers, GJ.
Interesting points. Having said that, though, look what is happening with the music model at the moment. We had all these, you know, DRMs and things like that that came along, and it's slowly disappearing.
DRM being digital rights management.
Indeed.
Where you couldn't copy.
There's still a bit of it around, but nonetheless. And, of course, Apple, being the king of it, you mentioned in the news there, Dr. Ron, too, that they've dropped the price of their music on the iTunes store to match the US market. So Australia, it's 99 cents for a track now. Is that right?
No, for apps.
Oh, for apps.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not for music?
Nope.
Oh, damn, I told my daughter the wrong thing.
Uh-oh.
I said, Dr. Ron said, but no, it's not. Well, Dr. Ron didn't say.
Now the rules state you have to give her your credit card.
No, absolutely not. She's underage. She cannot have a credit card.
But it'll be so easy. It'll be so easy for her.
Just apps.
Just apps.
What's wrong with the rest of the store that...
Didn't you listen to the news?
No, I didn't. We were talking.
I listened and talked.
So it's applications, for example.
You're a girl. You can multitask. I'm a boy.
Applications that used to cost $1.19 in Australia now cost 99 cents. So it's the same as the US pricing where it's 99 cents. But currently, there's no change to music or movies.
Ah. Oh.
But they've had to make a conscious decision to adjust that. That hasn't just adjusted itself with the exchange rate. They've kept it deliberately high.
Yes, exactly. They've made a conscious decision not to because they want a bit more in their skyrocket.
Yep, yep. We'll
talk about that shortly.
Mm.
So that's the correspondence?
That's the correspondence, Andrew. Thank you, everyone, for sending that in. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Do you remember, I think last week we talked about Apple and their iPhone tracking software that was put in there and all that sort of stuff? I think we glossed over it. During the course of the week, an interesting article came out in the press that Apple is going to compensate a user in Korea for having the tracking software put onto their device. The story goes along the lines of this, that Apple Korea has paid compensation to a user of its iPhone after collecting location data without the consent. It was the first payout by the US headquartered company for these complaints because it was a bit of a ruckus at the time, wasn't it? Like, oh, my iPhone will track. And to Apple's credit, they brought out a patch fairly quickly to actually stop it from doing that. Anyway, Apple, or the Korean branch of Apple, paid 1 million won. And that's not hash won, that is just won. I think that's the unit of currency for Korea, which equates to around about $1,000 US in compensation to a gentleman who had he was being tracked.
How
someone
this,
took it through the,
how's
to the
how's this one gentleman different to the other 800,000 people in the world that...
Well, I think he was the only one who took them to court, yes.
And how does $1,000 make him feel better?
Well, if you're in Korea, 1,000 won, it's buy a beer, buy a nice night out, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
A dinner, but yeah, there you go. That's what happened in Korea. Whether it'll head off to the most litigious country in the world is yet to be seen, but I think that's probably why they got their little patch out. But I thought that was rather funny, actually.
Now, we had people swearing black and blue that Apple didn't receive this information, that the device collected it and hung on to it.
Yeah, even Apple said that too.
Apple said that as well, didn't they?
Yeah. It was legacy from something that just managed to stay in the code or something, and that was it.
Well, I wonder, like the news article from Reuters said that it happened after Apple collected location data without consent. I wonder if that means that the data was actually sent to Apple or if they're talking generically like the Apple iPhone or the Apple device collected data.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it is. We'd have to look into it in a bit more detail.
If you could speak Korean, sueapple.co.kr.
Oh, really? They've got a web page for it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he had a beanies bonnet.
sueapple.co.kr. That's very funny. He's put a bit of work into that.
Yeah.
That can be our website for the week.
Maybe that's where the $1,000 went.
Maybe.
Website
by strange coincidence, the guy happens to be a lawyer.
Ah, well, that's all falling into place now, isn't it?
And I think he wants to use his case as a precedent to get a class action up and going.
To get more money.
Okay. All right, let's talk a bit about Twitter, shall we?
Yay!
Twitter, as it first started out life as, with a little R, rather than, they dropped the E. It's probably the easiest way of putting it, when it first started.
Twitter.
5 years ago.
Twitter.
Has it changed the way we communicate?
Yes.
For the better?
Yes.
You've just worked this out, haven't you, Graham?
Was it a statement or a question,
Graham? That was a question.
Right.
And it was
Okay. Sounded like a statement.
It makes me more succinct and concise with what I want to say because I've only got 140 characters in which to say it.
Yeah, but yours is like the SMS. It just rolls into the next message, I've realised.
Sometimes. Not all the time. Generally, yeah, I'm pretty
good.
You're
not supposed to use it that way.
Oh, aren't you? No, okay. It just rolls into the next...
Some things can't fit in 140 characters, but... I try.
See, that was the whole idea behind Twitter, wasn't it? To make you succinct and to the point.
Yeah. No, the whole idea was to fit it into an SMS message.
Well, exactly right, Graham.
Which has a 160 limit.
Yeah, but that rolls into other messages. You can keep going. That was an invention by the telcos to get a double whack for a very small amount of bandwidth. Because I think even you yourself have worked out the price of bandwidth on a per dollar basis for SMS.
And that was going to be my next point. Who uses SMS anymore? We've all got smartphones with email and Twitter and all sorts of things on it. So surely no one's using SMS anymore, even for Twitter.
If you actually open your phone up and I show you my SMS... Well, Dr. Ron, you're a classic example of this. You were going, where's all my mail? Where's all my space gone on my Android device?
Yeah, I did.
45 meg of it was in SMSs.
45, yeah, and MMS messages, yeah. Absolutely. I had this application there that was taking up 45 meg of precious memory, and it was the Android, I think it was phone dialer service, and I couldn't find out... I couldn't find out what the service did or what effect it would have actually clearing it. And I cleared it, and it took me half a day to realise what had happened. It was actually holding all of my text messages and my MMS messages.
And now they're all gone.
They're all gone, thankfully, and the phone's a lot better for it.
So there is demand still for short messaging services.
Well, no, Dr. Ron just said he deleted them all and he doesn't miss them, so...
No, I'm sure he wouldn't, but he'll fill them up again fairly shortly. But look, in just a normal day, I've had 17 SMSs from him who's sitting across the table here. Because people tend
to... he could tweet you instead, and it would cost less.
He could, yes. But then the whole world sees the tweet, unless you do an at, anyway.
I can do a direct message. Graham's right. I could do that.
Yeah, but the problem with it is you can't tweet whilst driving.
No, you can text while you're driving,
No.
That doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
No. Andrew?
No, you shouldn't be doing that.
Are you texting while driving?
Yeah, but you speak to the phone.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, you just go, hey, Vlingo, SMS, Dr. Ron, turn on... Oh, no.
I'm sure there's a whenever I run Vlingo on my phone... tweet program somewhere. There'd have to be. There'd have to be something that'll tweet for you.
STT program.
And if you send me a tweet, it talks the text back at me.
Still.
Speak in an American accent. Did we have this discussion last week?
We have this discussion every few weeks, yeah.
This might have been an office conversation I had.
Text message, Dr. Ron.
Yeah. Do it like that.
That's like the connect. You have to speak in an American
accent. If it loads Vlingo, then my phone will spontaneously reset when I take it out of the car kit.
Oh, really?
It makes it behave in unfortunate ways.
Yeah, well, Vlingo, they've just brought down... This is an app on the iPhone, and I think you can get it on... Sorry, an app on Android. But I think you can get it on the iPhone, because I think Brian in the office has got it, because when he sold his soul to the devil and jumped ship, he couldn't live without his Vlingo.
And it went from phone 7 to...
It just annoys me that it was so easy, and it was built in my old Nokia Mars Bar phone. And it was built in. I didn't have to download extra apps and have my phone crash and all sorts of things. And yet these so-called smartphones... No voice dialing. I just don't understand that. I don't understand why it wasn't a core feature, why voice dialing wasn't number 3 on the list of things the phone must do. You know, the first two of which is turn on and make a phone call.
Yeah, well, that's.
I just don't understand why it's so hard.
Yeah. Oh well,
we heard a few weeks ago from was there a Telstra colleague who sent us information about SMS. And short messaging on the phone networks in Europe, and it's practically gone, doesn't exist anymore. It's been replaced by everyone using instant messaging applications.
And that was where I started, yes. We don't need SMSs anymore, gone, no more, don't need them.
Okay.
And therefore, we can lift the 140-character limit on Twitter because no one needs SMSs anymore.
Ah.
Oh,
there you go.
Well, all right, answer me this, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Yeah.
Answer me this. Pages. They're still here. People still have them. Well, I haven't seen one of recent times, but...
Well, there you go.
They're still generating all that spurious emissions around 150 meg on the radio, I've heard. They're still there. You can hear them.
Well...
Who uses a pager? Are they still using them in the hospital?
Don't look at me.
Because you're not allowed to use mobile phones in hospitals. Are they using them there, are they? So they go,
maybe.
Tweet, come to emergency.
But no one listens to those no mobile phone signs anyway.
No.
Okay, good comedy sketch coming on here, but yes, you're right. No one does.
They don't. They really, really don't. Even I see people filling up the car with petrol on the phone.
Oh, yeah, it's like pilots. Mm. Pilots are quite happy to sit in the front of the aeroplane and talk on a phone,
yeah.
But no one else can.
Have you tried doing that at a service station and the attendant comes over the loudspeaker?
They get very nasty,
really, really angry.
Oh, no, I haven't tried it.
Any idea how well the antenna has to be tuned for a radio like that to produce a spark?
Yeah, I know.
It just would never, ever happen.
No.
And they did studies to find out whether this phenomenon was real
or not. How many times in the world did it actually, a mobile phone, had caused an explosion at a petrol pump?
Well, of course, it's always hard to pick out what the cause is. But they noticed a strange anomaly was that a very high proportion of these petrol pump fires were female drivers.
Careful you go with this.
What did they and it's, put that down
what
to?
What are you insinuating?
And it's to do with...
Your electric personality, Lena.
A spark of love.
This just goes off.
It's to do with static electricity and
clothing.
And clothing. And the
oh, really?
That, yeah, and sliding in and out of the car and
shuffling your feet on the ground as you get out.
And it's electrostatic discharge from static buildup.
Synthetic fabric.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
I used to remember doing that at school. You used to rub your feet on the carpet and then go and
did
touch
you have the pencil in your hand and you had your thumb over the end of the HB pencil and you go and touch someone with the end of the pencil and electrocute them.
Absolutely. That was a great prank. I wonder if people still do that at schools. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, and the ruler going on the desk.
There's science everywhere.
Yeah, there's lots of science.
Here's...
That never created
static,
an
static electricity is it's a momentary sensation. It's much more fun to get a little relay and a 9-volt battery.
Oh, here we go. Hang on. I'm queuing up.
Torture.
And build time that can deliver a constant stream of irritating high voltage electricity.
Were you that mean kid at school, Graham?
No.
This is what he does when he's refueling his car.
Yeah.
It's out the 9-volt battery and
A 9-volt battery in a relay, and it vibrates, and when the contact's released, there's a high voltage from the coil. Yeah.
Whilst we're talking about school age pranks, something comes to mind. I had a conversation with my sister the other day. She has a young child in the low teens, and this is a sign of the times. I was telling Dr. Ron at the office today that she did not know which side of the envelope to put the stamp on. Now, is that a sign of the times?
Ooh, it might be. Yeah, it might be.
There was one,
and of course, you don't see mail with stamps on anymore anyway because they're
all gets
like
franked,
put through franking machines, exactly.
So here she is going, "What do I do with this, Mum? Put it in the corner. Which corner?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old's your
low teens
daughter?
Let's just leave it at that, shall we? Low teens. Yeah.
Wow.
Phil in the chat room says, "So mobile phones at service stations should be allowed, but not clothing."
Phil, if you've been to my service station, that's not a good thing to say.
And it's very cold in Melbourne at the moment.
We have a lot of seniors in our area.
Okay. We need all the clothing that we can possibly muster.
We do indeed. Hey, we were talking about Twitter and its fifth birthday and we awfully got awfully distracted.
We did.
We normally wilfed away.
We did wilf away. 5 years ago, July the 15th, 2006, Twitter was born. Graham has since joined the club and realised the value of Twitter and has now got 50, I don't know whether there's any more, Graham. Have you checked in the last few moments?
52 last time I looked.
Yes, which is not bad for being on Twitter for a week and having only sent 4 tweets. How many
53.
Of them are... How many
Someone
of them,
yeah. must have just signed up.
Come on, let's sign up for Graham's Twitter account.
If you'd like to follow Twitter on Graham on Twitter, it's GCTTR, capital letters.
How many tweets has he got?
He's
53 now.
How
many tweets?
How many tweets?
Four tweets.
You have 26,694 to catch up to me.
Oh,
go.
Ready? Start tweeting.
Yeah. Now.
Yeah, good.
Now.
It's not one of my ambitions is to tweet as much as Lena.
Anyway.
Lena's had a head start.
At the start of the year, Twitter users in Japan set the tweets per second record at, this is probably where Lena is on a daily basis too, 6,939 tweets per second.
Sounds like me.
That's in Japan. It does actually.
That's when my thumb's sore.
She admits it.
Yeah.
That's when my thumb's sore.
I know someone who actually subscribed to you on Telstra to get it converted to text and Telstra desubscribed them for you.
What?
Telstra have got a blacklist and they say
They have a blacklist and you're on their Telstra blacklist.
I'm on a Telstra blacklist? Oh, good lord.
So
that's not cool.
They were just going through so much bandwidth retweeting on converting to SMS that system that's not required. Anyway, where were we? 6,939 tweets per second in Japan, 4 seconds after midnight in Japan, and on New Year's Day in March, Twitter users were sending 1 billion tweets a week. Now that's sounding more like you, Lena.
Yeah, that's more like me.
And today, it obviously on that particular day, actually, it's fifth birthday. Anyway, there were 224 tweets sent on July the 15th in 2006. 224. Most of them were probably test. Hello.
Hello world.
Hello world test type sort of tweets.
Well, hang on. What day did Lena sign up?
Well, that's a good question.
2 years ago?
Oh, okay. So that wasn't her.
Anyway, today users send that many tweets in less than a tenth of a second. So there you go. An interesting statistics for the small micro blogging company. The tipping point for Twitter's popularity was the 2007 South by Southwest Festival, otherwise known as SXSW. And during the event, Twitter usage increased from 20,000 tweets per day to 60,000 tweets. See, everyone has those sort of like milestones,
don't
they?
That must have been the day that Lena joined.
Darren UK in the chat has put down how long have you been tweeting.com, and I just put my username in, and it's told me 2 years, 4 months, 6 days, 17 hours, 24 minutes, and 4 seconds.
How long?
That's how long I've been tweeting.
You been
It's tweeting. Much easier to click the link in the chat, Andrew.
Compare to friend, GCTTR.
It also tells you the sign up date, which is clever. So Lena's was 11th of March 09. Mine was 31st of March 08.
I put compare to friend, GCTTR, then clicked go. 6 days, 22 hours, 49 minutes, and 39 seconds.
And that's got to be you win.
Underneath says you win.
That's a contest.
That's pretty impressive. What a good little website.
That is very
Graham's
cool.
Graham's
screen, you,
the same thing says you lose. That's very close, isn't it? 6 days, 22 hours would be right because he signed up towards the end of last week's episode.
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't that amazing?
Well, you're doing well, Graham.
Astonishing.
So keep the tweets coming. They're good.
All right. So that's social networking. Let's talk about the new kid on the block, Google Plus, shall we? Because what is about nearly 3 weeks down and it's kicking some goals. How have you found it in the last week? Dr. Ron, I've found a few instances where I can't even connect into it. It's saying busy, go away.
Oh, really?
Yep. Have you found that?
I haven't found that I've been unable to connect to it, but I do have a confession to make.
Oh.
I have turned on instant upload from my telephone.
Oh, you have?
A trial.
Just don't tick the box that says upload everything.
That's right. So that's the catch, isn't it?
I think I learnt the hard way. I've had an excess bill from Telstra now.
The other thing to be careful of is if you have that turned on and you manage your photos inside Google Plus, there is a checkbox there which allows you to, if you delete it from Google Plus, it'll go into your phone and delete it out of your phone as well. So if it's a nonsense photo or a blurry one and one that you just snapped and you don't care and you want to get rid of it, that's fine.
Oh, the ones which you take before the real one.
That's right.
Those ones.
Or you shoot five in the space of 30 seconds hoping you'll get a good photo. But if you want to actually keep all the photos on your phone, just make sure that's unchecked. Or Google Plus will take it upon itself to delete stuff off your phone.
Oh, okay. That's a good tip.
Mm.
But
like
then
that.
Again...
Just be careful. Just check the settings. That's okay. And follow your nose. You should be right.
Very good.
Yeah. But no, it's going well. Going very well. I'm finding that I've almost got as many people following me, if you like, or that have added me to their circles on Google Plus in the space of 2 weeks that I've got on my Facebook page, my Facebook profile in the space of 2 years.
So what conclusions could you draw from that?
A lot more interest in Dr. Ron on Google Plus.
Dr. Ron knows a lot of geeks.
Or Dr. Ron knows a lot of geeks, or a lot of geeks know Dr. Ron. But
anyway,
I can see it replacing Facebook for me.
How about this? Here's some stats. Google Plus now has more than 10 million users. Okay? That's not bad for 3 weeks. How much is Facebook? They've got two-thirds of the planet.
Yeah, 750 million
or something. Something like that. No, it's more than that. What? Sorry, there's another show going on in the studio.
Can you see what Graham's doing here, Lena?
It's radio.
What's he doing?
He's starting a game.
He's loading up Portal.
He's loading Portal on his laptop.
Ooh.
There goes the bandwidth.
This is this is astounding. We've had Twitter 1 week, and then the next week he's loading Portal.
I'm slowly taking over. You feel it.
She's a bad influence on me, can you tell?
Oh, dear. It's the Van Deventer influence.
Yep. Definitely.
We'll have more on that on computer games down the track, won't we? Yes. Yeah, so 10 million users already. Google Plus sees more than 1 billion items shared and received per day. The Google Plus One button is being served 2.3 billion times a day.
Have you noticed your Google Plus button coming up in your Google searches and things?
I have.
Yeah.
Lots of people have been clicking it.
You can plus one things.
Yeah. That's like the thumbs up for people who are going, what is Google Plus? Google Plus is Google's foray into social networking, which could revolutionise the way we look at things. Is it open? It was public. No, it's not public yet, is it? When are they? We don't know. You've got to have an invite to get on, don't you? Like Gmail did when it first started.
Yeah.
Some people have reported not having to have an invite. They've just gone there and have been able to access it immediately. Other people have complained that they can't get onto it. It's a little bit hit and miss still because it's in beta. And sometimes we have an option of being able to invite people to Google Plus if we add them to a circle. And wherever possible, we had about probably a dozen or two dozen requests via email during the week from Tech Talk listeners, which was nice. Please add me if you can. And we've added as many people as we possibly can. But hang in there. If we've sent you an invitation and you still can't get on, just retry. Or just try anyway.
Yep. And the Google, obviously, as we had the app of the week last week, there is a little icon type sort of app that you can get for your Android phone.
Yes.
The iPhone, it says coming soon. But don't forget, it's web browser friendly on most of the common web browsers at the moment.
I hope Apple release that soon. Because they put the application in for approval fairly early on, and Apple are still sitting on it before they put it in their iTunes.
In the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our people will talk to your people. Well, we'll get back to your type.
You can't imagine them jumping over hurdles to approve it straight away. But anyway.
You know. Or do you? Now, some Twitter some Twitter stats, just so that everybody needs to know where Twitter's at on the 5th anniversary.
Yep.
Twitter is delivering 350 billion tweets a day, of which 1 billion is Lena's.
350 billion tweets a day, that's a lot.
That's a lot of tweets. Yep. Twitter saw more than 600,000 sign-ups in one day.
Wow.
That's pretty exponential, if you ask me. Twitter also mentioned that there were 224 tweets sent on its launch day in 2006, which we mentioned earlier, and that many tweets are now sent in less than 1/10 of a second. Can you count for 1/10 of a second quickly?
Yep, just did.
Yeah, good. So in the, there you go, that many tweets that go out there. So
that was it. Counting.
Look, I think there's a lot of stats that are coming out, but will Google give Twitter a run for its money? Well, when I was tweeting about the show this evening, I thought I'll drop one of those little tweets into the Google Plus account in public, which goes out to all those people that now see it. It's a bit like Twitter, but on Google Plus. See, Google Plus is bringing Facebook and Twitter together.
And like Graham was saying, it doesn't have the 140-character limitation.
Ah. I want them to be separate. I don't want them together. I don't want anyone touching my Twitter. Leave my Twitter alone.
Leave your tweets alone.
Yes.
That's good.
Darren in the UK says he might leave Google Plus for business-only people, like LinkedIn.
Well, that's the next thing, isn't it?
Phil in the chat room says he tried to make that divide with Facebook for friends and LinkedIn for business, but he's hoping that Google Plus, with the circles feature, might cater for both.
Mm. I think if people are busy in social circles, no pun intended, right across the spectrum from work, in their private lives, in their sporting lives, and in their after-hours lives, the circles are going to be terrific for everyone keeping in touch on the one thing and more or less keeping it separate until someone makes the awful faux pas of actually retweeting it, for want of a better term, into a different group of friends. Oops, sorry, wrong circle.
Yes.
Then it'll be out. Then it'll be on for young and old.
You'll have people drunk in charge of a Google Plus account.
And especially if you've got pictures with it, because it's automatically uploaded from your mobile phone, it could be dangerous stuff. Bring it on. It's a thing of, you know, newspapers, that, isn't it?
Let us know what you think. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. We can have the show notes at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We'll be talking about this there at some length, I suspect.
So now that I've found my way back to the forum, what else has been happening this week, Dr. Ron? Anything newsworthy apart from, I know it's been a relatively slow week.
It's been a slow tech news week.
Because we had all the releases. Apple hit record highs in their financial reports, as we mentioned in the opening, and so did Google, 36% revenue surge. But how have you got any shares in any of these companies?
No.
They're very expensive.
They are. They're very expensive if you want to buy just one Google share.
Yeah, they've probably got a minimum 10 order. There goes $5,000.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Scammers cashing in on the NBN uncertainty in Tasmania. That was interesting.
Yes. Lena said, why don't they do it in Queensland?
Yeah, where it's warmer.
Much warmer.
Yeah. If you're going
to
be...
They're raising money to go to Queensland.
Ah, that'd do it. Yeah, what happened there?
Well, it's people that are...
Just doing a door knock.
Door knocking and saying hey, you hear the NBN's coming past the that's it, that'll be there now.
He's doing Foley now.
Yeah.
Someone's here. Hello.
Hello. People knocking on doors saying, look, do you want to be signed up to the NBN? It's coming past the front of your house in the next short while. Just, you know, give us a couple of $100 and we'll put your name on the list, and that's the first month of broadband paid for. Mm. And silly people say, oh, that sounds like a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Hand over their hard-earned cash. Mr. Conroy said people should protect themselves by applying common sense.
He did.
And asking
vigorously.
For 5 o'clock Charlie on one of his press releases at 5 o'clock on a Friday.
People should ask for appropriate identification and ensure appropriate checks are made. I think that's sage advice there from the communications minister.
He's good. That's why we voted for
him. Liberally apply common sense.
No, no, he's the other. Oh, I get it. I get it. See what you did.
Oh, dear. Well, while we're on that level, why do you look like that, Graham? You look stunned.
He is without speech.
Did that last comment just make you...
It was a bad one.
Make you just kick back from the microphone and no?
I felt it best not to comment.
Yeah.
What's the next story, Andrew?
Probably was. Whilst we were talking briefly about social networking, did you know Microsoft had one? They've sort of been gazumped now.
A social network?
Yeah,
a
social network. Did and you? It's called...
MySpace.
Bing.
No. What?
How do you pronounce this? T-U-L-A-L-I-P. Tulalip.
Ah.
Yeah. Microsoft is working on a social design project called Tulalip, if that's how you pronounce it.
Tulalip. How do you spell it?
T-U-L-A.
Lip.
As in liposuction.
The Google machine knows nothing about it. I'm getting links to resort casinos and Native Americans.
Just empty your case and go again.
Yeah. Okay, Tulalip, I believe.
Yeah, Tulalip. According to details from a splash page that was obviously published on a website recently, as of Thursday, Microsoft has taken down the splash page and replaced it with a message acknowledging the project.
Really?
Plausible deniability. It says, thanks for stopping by. So, yes, SOCL.com is an international design project from a team at Microsoft Research, which was mistakenly published to the web. We didn't mean to. Honest, the message states.
We didn't mean to, honest.
Yeah, full stop. So, yes, if they're heading down that track, it'd be interesting to see. Anyway, there are photos of the splash screen of this particular social network site floating around. It's a big green thing. Have you found it on the other search engine yet? No? Okay.
No.
The splash page describes a Tulalip service as a way for users to find what you need and share what you know easier than ever. It sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
Right.
Is it like a project name, Tulalip?
Could be.
Yeah, hopefully.
There are options.
Really
it's work
bad.
In progress.
It's awful.
It's awful.
Awful.
There are options to connect the services with both Facebook and Twitter. The page also contains two rows of images that looks very similar to Tiles, designed interface around the way Microsoft News Windows Phone 7 operating system. So, yeah, who knows what they're up to over there in Redmond.
Well, we heard recently that Microsoft were going to acquire Skype.
What, is there news that they aren't?
No, I'm just speculating that if they were creating their own social network of sorts...
Well, they're plugged into Facebook, maybe...
Yeah, maybe they have Skype as an underlying technology for voice and video and text chat.
Yeah, maybe Zucker's going to do a deal with...
as opposed to Windows Live...
Bulma.
Messenger.
Yeah, you use Windows Live Messenger, don't you?
Yeah.
Is it
you're the one.
Sometimes.
Yeah, is it popular?
Yeah.
It's an annoying pop-up on a Windows desktop, isn't it?
I hear less and less of people
this
using...
This is one reason for going to Mac.
Using like, that's that noise. Yeah, it drives you crazy. It's like, stop messaging me, whoever that is. It's stuff that nightmares are made of. People are using like Facebook and the chat in the social networking more and more, aren't they? Like Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter.
Dr. Ron, your fan club on the chat is very well informed. Do you know who that person is?
Let me switch back to that tab.
It could well be. I was thinking some socialite in Sydney, potentially.
The Warlock member is noticeable by his absence.
He is, and we love Dr. Ron has come full for... Which, if you'd like to know what we're talking about, this is the Tech Talk Radio chat, which runs every Monday night. Well, it runs all the time, but we're all in here on Monday nights at 8 o'clock when we go live to air. And if you're listening to us out there in post-8 o'clock time on a Monday night, there might be remnants in there, might be a few crumbs left in there, but other than that, we all chat along there live. You listen to us on the stream and come here and cohort with us. All right, we're going to take a break. I think it's that time of the night, isn't it? We're going to come back and we're going to have a view from the couch, which has moved outside onto the deck and become the hammock.
Oh, it's not the weather for it.
No.
Well, no, you're exactly right.
He'll be lying in a puddle in his hammock.
He could well be. But what do you take to your hammock? We'll discuss this when we come back after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. frankly. No.
Have you worked out the five finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I but thought I got out. They pulled me back in.
Entertaining. They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Lena Van Deventer is in. Dr. Ron is in. And Graham Callaghan is in this evening.
Hello.
Bantering about all things technological.
Yes.
Hopefully getting your fix this evening, as a lot of people are in our chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, sitting there talking music. We should do a music show at some stage.
Damo the Geek says, bring back Net Meeting.
Net Meeting. Oh, I remember getting that through a firewall. That was hell.
It was hell in a handbasket, wasn't it? H.323 is the protocol.
Yeah.
Get your finger off the nerd alert button. We'll stop there.
Yeah, no, good. So, it was all good fun back in those days.
And Lena in our chat room says, oh, that's you.
That's me.
You're Lena.
Oh, you're in the chat room too, are you?
I am.
You're going to be in Adelaide in 5 days.
What are you doing in Adelaide?
I'm going to AVCon, the Anime and Video Games Convention.
Oh, we talked about that.
Yeah.
In good old downtown, I like Adelaide.
In Radelaide.
Yeah.
Radelaide.
Radelaide.
Whereabouts is it? Anywhere that we know?
The Adelaide Convention Centre.
Oh, have they got one?
It says so on the website here.
Oh, does it? Oh, you're fancy, Graham.
It's organised.
I've been quite interested to note your current enthusiasm towards computer gaming, Graham.
Oh, yes.
Portal and the likes. I think we should do this first.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
She has a lot to answer for now in this studio.
I do.
Corrupted a lot of people since you've come on board.
I've made them better.
Really? In which way?
Everyone in this studio has now played some of Portal 1.
Yeah. If not all of it.
Ron's an exquisite pupil in that he started Portal 2.
Halfway through Portal 2.
An exquisite
pupil.
Thank you.
I've never heard him described like that before.
But yeah, Portal 1 and Portal 2... I think we should have a chat about, because I'm very excited.
All right, off you go. Portal 1.
Graham has even been playing Portal 1.
I tried it. I tried it with a Wacom tablet. That's not a good way to do it.
No,
Andrew was cursing and screaming during the week.
Because that happened during the week, didn't it?
I've got to find a mouse.
Yeah, I don't have a mouse. I don't have a rodent on my computer. And if you ever tried playing Portal with a pen, it just doesn't.
No, I wouldn't do that, no.
I had this vision of you trying to tap it to shoot a yellow portal or blue portal and trying to right-click on something.
Dragging to shoot yellow
portals. It wouldn't have worked.
So tell us about Portal, Lena, just briefly, for those people listening around the country that don't quite know what it is. And where do you get it from and all that stuff?
You can get it off Steam, which is a digital distribution platform, but you can also buy it in hard copies in game stores. It's a first-person puzzler, I guess you'd call it.
A puzzler?
Because you are solving puzzles. But it's from the first-person perspective, so it's looking out of your own eyes, and you've got...
It's kind of a first-person shooter, except that what you're shooting isn't...
It's holes.
Bullets and guns.
Yeah, you're not killing anyone.
No.
You're... partially.
It's a lot of fun actually shooting a portal into the wall and watching yourself leave the room.
It is. You can shoot yellow and blue portals with your portal gun that you've got, and you enter one of them and exit one of them, and that's how you maneuver your way around the level to get to the end of the level. And they put lots of different things around to stop you getting there. But it's lots and lots of fun, and it was very, very well received when it first came out. And it's still probably one of my favourite games of all time. So that's why I was glad I could convert you all.
and convert us you have.
Yep.
So I've got through Portal 1. That was exciting.
Yep.
And Portal 2, from what I've told you, I'm about halfway, two-thirds of the way through.
I think you are, yes.
It's
here we go.
That's the voice.
Got it on now.
That's the voice.
Yeah, it is. Now, the good thing about Portal is it's a game for everybody.
It is. You don't have to be young, old, or anything. You can just play it. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are. Yep. And it's a great... It gets the mind thinking. It's a bit like a chess game in cyberspace. You have to think about it. It's nothing like a chess game. I don't know why I said that.
But I know what you mean. It's cerebral. It's
strategy.
It's not one of these things. You know, you don't have... You do it at your own pace. You do it in your own way.
Yeah.
And you think about it. And it gets the grey matter going. And I think that's what I liked about it. Because I used to be a Warcraft player when I was younger because I used to like the strategy of Warcraft, and Portal is a little different. You have to think in three dimensions, don't you?
You do, definitely. And you have to have not a really good grasp of physics, but it helps because speedy thing goes in, speedy thing goes out, I believe is how they term it in the game. But you can...
Wasn't it like Newton's first law or second law or something?
Speedy thing goes in, speedy thing goes out. Yep. So you keep your momentum when you enter a portal.
I don't think Newton had portals.
No.
Imagine a world in which Newton had portals.
Mind blown. But how are you finding it, Graham?
Yes, you're the newest convert.
He just goes to the icon on the desktop and double clicks it.
That's right. Yeah. Now, it is a big download too. We must warn people of that.
Oh, it took me about 3 weeks to download it. Yeah, I bought it ages ago.
If you're bandwidth challenged on your account,
bandwidth impaired. Yep.
You will find that I think Portal 1. I don't know how big, but the second one, Portal 2, is
Portal
11 2's gig.
Quite big. Yeah, 11 gig.
That's 3 DVDs, guys. So go easy on your bandwidth, or do it at the end of the month when you've got bandwidth to burn.
Yep.
Or at 2 a.m. when you're off peak or whatever, you can do it then.
If you're that way inclined,
yeah.
But now, the actual reason I got it when I did was because Steam were having the sale that you mentioned last week on the show, I think.
Yes.
Because we all did it.
And is that all finished now?
Yes.
Yeah. Back to retail prices.
Sorry, guys.
I haven't checked what the price is now, but it shouldn't be too bad. On Steam, it's much cheaper than in physical copy, of course. But, I want to know what you think about it, Graham.
I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you sat down to just play a little bit.
You like a great
I sat down to play 5 minutes and then stood up some number of hours later.
And the sun was coming up?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's the sign of a good game, I think.
Yeah.
But didn't it give you... It gave your brain an exercise, a good workout.
Yes.
And I think that's the challenge
behind it. Yes, and I did get to that point where one of the levels I couldn't solve, and I went to bed and came back to it a couple... a day or so later and went straight through it without even thinking. So
that's the trick, isn't it? Just put it down for a day or so and come back to it, have another look at it with a fresh brain.
Now, but it's also, I get the impression there's a lot of stuff I'm missing as I race through it for the first time. And I'm guessing if I go back and go through all the levels again and explore some of the nooks and crannies and things, we'll find more interesting stuff. Yeah,
I think you can. And there's a lot of achievements along the way that once I like to do the achievements after I finish the game. There's a few achievements you get just by playing it, but there's a few things like there's these video camera, like CCTV cameras.
Oh, I shoot them
in all of them, and if you shoot them and they fall down, you get an achievement for getting 33 of them.
Oh, do you? Right.
Yeah, so it's those sorts of things that.
Please do not shoot the facilities or whatever. Yeah.
Do not destroy vital test equipment.
Yes, and you can go through again after you've done your first playthrough and do a few more fun things like that.
All right, so Portal 1's got 19 levels. Portal 2, how many has that got? Do you know? Have you played both of them through?
I have. Yep, I finished both of them. The second one sort of doesn't have.
Oh, I do now.
The chronological nature of the first one.
Oh, really? It jumps around a little bit. What's the difference between the two of them? And should you do one first? Is it lost on two before you do one?
You could do two on its own, but you'd probably get more out of it doing number one first.
Yeah.
Just because there's a bit of backstory there and you get to see Aperture Science, which is this testing facility that you're in.
That's what you're playing in, isn't it? Yeah.
You get to see that, how it started, because in Portal 2, you see that completely ruined.
Reminds me of the elevator in Star Trek.
It is a bit like that.
Yeah.
I think
you mean the turbo lift.
Yes, thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Right.
Sorry, Trekkies. I apologize.
So Portal 2, you sort of see Aperture Science in a different way. There's a lot of things that have happened to it. It's a bit more in the future and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So it helps to see Portal 1 from, for a bit of background story, but it's not essential. You can do Portal 2 without it.
You're a full-time closet gamer. How does this rank?
Closet?
Closet.
Really?
Yeah,
you think absolutely. People don't know that I play
games. She's an overt, out and proud gamer.
Haven't you read her tweets? Nothing to do with gaming. It's all to do with what she's having for dinner tonight, what clothes to wear. But no, seriously, how do you rank it in respect to memorable games? Is it up there?
Portal's definitely up there as one of my favourite of all time.
Yeah.
Portal 2 was great, but it still had the charming aspect that Portal 1 had, but it's just got a bit more comedy and it is a comedy game, whereas Portal 1 was sort of just something that Valve did on the side and chucked in the orange box with a few other games.
Yep.
Portal 2 definitely is a bit more polished and a bit more, you know, there's a bit more story and a lot more going into it. But it's, yeah, they're both probably some of my favourite games of all time, yeah.
So have a bit of a look. See, you can get it from Steam, which is steam.com, and you've got to sign up.
Steam powered,
that's right. Yep. You've got to sign up there and give it your credit card details and it'll download it. Yep. You can get it in the game shop, can you?
You can. Portal 1 you'll find in the orange box, which is it's got Half-Life, Team Fortress 2 and Portal in it. So it's three games in one. They're all made by Valve. And Portal 2 you can find boxed separately on its own.
All right. So if you've got some time to kill in an aeroplane flight or something like that, probably a really good thing to do. It'd be great on a long haul, wouldn't it?
It'd be great. Yeah, we keep your mind occupied.
Yeah,
for sure.
Jump onto the aeroplane, plug in underneath the seat, and off you go for 16 hours. You can play Portal all the way between Sydney and Los Angeles or something like that. I think I'll have to keep that in mind for the next trip.
Now, we've all played it on the PC, but it's available on the PlayStation 3 as well.
Portal 2 is, yep. I think Portal 1 would be as well. Yeah, you can play Orange Box on...
How is the PS3 console network going? I haven't heard anything for a while. There's no news, good news when it comes to the PS3.
I haven't gone back.
Do you reckon
Isn't that sad? Lost customers?
I think
they might have. I haven't gone back. I've had a month or more without it and just never really gone back.
But, so what else is news this week? You were talking about classification issues and stuff. You were blasphemous about New South Wales,
I think, before the show.
What happened?
I was a little bit angry.
You were.
The R18 vote has been pushed back again.
Really? It's just Groundhog Day, really, isn't it, for the R18-plus cast? Yeah? What happened?
This Friday was supposed to be the Standing Committee of Attorneys General meeting. We call it the SCAG meeting, as the D-Day for gaming classification in Australia, with all 9 federal, state, and territory censorship ministers. We're going to all vote on whether we should have an R18
rating
or not.
And is it only New South Wales that's causing a problem, or are there other rambunctious people?
New South Wales who can't come to the vote, I think, have said.
So they're the recalcitrant.
Yes. They said...
recalcitrant state, New South Wales.
New South Wales Attorney General Greg Smith.
Oh, really?
Will not be voting on the R18 for Game
Smith by name, Smith by nature.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mr. Anonymous.
He says more work needs to be done on this issue. We want to wait and see the results of the Australian Law Reform Commission classification review before he votes on it.
So he hasn't given any clear undertaking why he's not going to support it. Is that...
No.
Oh.
But you'd think he doesn't want to, and he wants to wait to see what comes out of this.
I just find it the option of either of not having it is worse than the option of having it. So, but anyway,
it's very frustrating.
Just a mere consumer, just a mere tech person who likes playing games on the odd occasion.
And the other thing that happened this week was the Manor Bar opened in Melbourne.
What's that?
It's a video game bar where you can get together with friends, have a few drinks, and there's consoles set up all around the bar where you can play games against each other, and it's lots and lots of fun.
Oh, really?
There's one in Brisbane.
You mentioned that last time you went up there, didn't you?
Yeah. It opened over a year ago, and this weekend saw the opening of this one in Melbourne on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy. You should pop down there and have a look.
Tell us about the games-themed cocktails.
Yeah, they do. They have games-themed cocktails. So they've got the Ocarina of Lime instead of the Ocarina of Time. They've got the Mana Potion, which is blue, and they've got a Health Potion, which is red.
Do they have a portal?
No, they don't have a portal.
Don't they?
Yet. Oh, they probably do. They probably have at some point. They change them quite often. But they've got all video game-themed cocktails and games playing all the time. And
where is
lots
it?
Of posters. On Brunswick Street, Fitzroy.
Okay.
So 336 or 338, I can't remember which
one. They've got one in Brisbane too. Because we have our listeners in Switch who listen to us up there.
And that's on Brunswick Street as well.
Oh, really? How coincidental is that?
Valley. Yeah.
So if there's a Brunswick Street in Adelaide, watch out.
Exactly.
Or Sydney somewhere.
Hopefully
I'm sure there is.
It's a good location.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so that's very exciting. You should pop down there and have a drink.
What else has got? Anything new in the gaming thing? Or is that really...
Not really.
Yeah, it's a bit like tech this week.
Yes, a bit of a slow news week. The R18 thing sort of just popped up today. Very, very frustrating. More will probably come out over the next few days.
Oh, very good.
So I think we should assign homework to Andrew and Graham.
Yes, finish Portal 1.
No.
By this time next week?
Yep.
No. I've had enough of computers this week.
You've had a bad computer week. Yeah. Graham's had a bad computer weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Friday went.
That was my colleague emailing me what he thinks is the fix for Mike's train server too.
Mike, oh, he said the word!
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 cents in the swear jar on the table.
Hang on, it was my rule. I can break it.
That's true.
Deary me. You know how I teased Adam Turner before the break?
Yeah.
We're going to have a view from the...
view from the soggy hammock.
Yeah, well, it's going to have to wait till after this one.
Fair enough.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Because you don't believe man walked on the moon, did you?
No, it was all done on the soundstage.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. It's not a-
Look, approve an R18 rating, or we're going to reform the way we do everything.
The road is now 2.4 metres from where the map says the road is.
That's flagpole for you.
Oh, Andrew.
Heathen. So, Mr. Zuckerberg is certainly...
Nonsense.
Entertaining.
I very much enjoyed it. I think it's very funny.
Informative.
It used to be cool.
Independent.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
That's completely impossible, Lena.
Absolutely. You can't do that.
I know.
Now, what were you saying? There was a back announce that you had to say. We were talking about it. I know, it's only a song ago, but you were just saying... We should talk about that.
The GPS. You can get GLaDOS, who's the announcer on Portal. You can get her to lie to you while you're driving as the GPS voice.
The voice of Aperture Laboratories.
Yeah. Aperture Science. Yep.
Aperture Science.
So she says, turn left in 100 metres and you're supposed to actually turn
if
right.
If you want to die. She'll say things like that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That's great.
You know the sad thing about that? People will follow it.
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah. I would love it. If I know where I'm going, I'll chuck it on just for something funny to listen to. Yeah. Absolutely.
I do like the characterizations and the personalizations you can get for those navigation. John Cleese does an absolute beauty.
Ah.
Yeah.
He would do a good one.
He would. He does. And there's some good examples online. You can actually go and have a listen and see what they're like. But no, that if you're a real Portal fan, that'd be huge, wouldn't it?
Mm. We should do a Tech Talk Radio voice for TomTom.
We should.
They go near an airport, it says, I'm on a plane!
Hello, can you hear me? I'm on a plane.
We've done a ringtone. That's gone off its little thing. It's very popular page, though.
Hasn't it? Yeah.
There must be people around the world with the Nerd Alert ringtone on their thing. We should find out what they're using it for. Who's been, which member of the family or which friend it has been applied to for their custom ringtone. Or whether it's just generic across your whole phone thing, you know, when someone rings. I try to not listen to my phone when it rings. People get very frustrated about that. You know, is that my phone ringing? I normally have others in the room that says, your phone's ringing.
I've got the Portal music for my ringtone.
Oh, no.
The little radio in Portal.
Oh, the music comes out of the radio.
Yep.
That's what I've got too, I think.
Cool.
But one thing with Portal, as you move around, the radio gets louder and softer. And
yeah, depending on whether you're close to the radio. Yeah,
it's very clever.
You can pick up a radio and carry it with you.
Can you?
Yes, you can.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
You can throw them into the drink too.
I wonder if you're going to...
I haven't tried that.
There it is. Oh, I love it.
Oh, yes.
That's the one?
That's the one, yeah. I wonder if you can take the radio to the couch.
I'm sure you can.
Possibly.
Or maybe even to the hammock. What do you take to the hammock when you recline, Dr. Ron? Do you have a hammock? Let's start at base one, shall we? The ABCs of hammock.
I had a bad experience with a hammock about 15 years ago, and I've got a phobia now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you fall down?
Oh, fear of hammocks. What's the technical term for that?
Hammophobia.
Pardon me?
I don't wish
hammophobia
any further.
Lena, have you had any hammock experiences, either good, bad, or indifferent?
I've never been in a hammock in my life.
Oh, so you've never had the experience of getting into a hammock and swinging in the breeze?
No, I haven't. Can't say I have. But if I did, I'd probably have my iPad.
iPad. Shockingly enough, I haven't got the answer, but I have found out that I'm not the first person to ask the question.
On Yahoo Answers, someone says, what is the fear of hammocks called? Oh, I'm glad I'm not alone. What has Adam done? Adam's secured himself a hammock.
Oh, yes, Adam has. In this lovely, beautiful, summery winter weather that we're having here in Melbourne, it's been fairly brass monkeyish out here in town of recent times. In fact, we had our coldest day the other day, and it felt like it too. So if you're listening to us in Queensland, can we come and live with you? It'd be nice up there in the warmth, wouldn't it? Anyway, Adam has a view from the couch, all about hammocks. And for the technophile people, what do you take to the hammock?
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
What do you buy the techie who has everything? A hammock, if this year's birthday present is anything to go by. A day off or a long weekend is when a hammock really proves its value, especially if, like me, you work from home. Lying back in a hammock with the sun on your face transports you to another world, even if you're just a few yards away from your desk. While hopping into a hammock is relaxing, hopping out of one is not. As such, the key to chilling out in a hammock is preparation. Make sure you've got everything you need within arm's reach. Go down the checklist. Food, drink, reading material, radio, music player, phone, remote controls, extension cable. Think of all the stuff you're likely to need for the next half hour or more. Just like settling down on the couch, settling in for a long session in a hammock requires some planning. Of course, if you're a tech lover, you can probably tick off many of those in the one gadget. Here's where a smartphone or a tablet can be the ultimate hammock accessory. Yet some gadgets are more practical than others. A 10-inch tablet might be great for computing on the couch, but it can be a little awkward to use in a hammock if you need to lean forward to use the keyboard. Even holding a large tablet to consume content in a hammock can become tiresome, although the lightweight iPad 2 obviously has an advantage over the 10-inch Android competition. A hammock-side table at eye height might be a valuable investment if you want to watch movies. If all you want to do is read, then a small, light and cheap Kindle might be the perfect tool for the job. If you're looking to type while reclining in a hammock, I found one-handed typing on a smartphone is much faster and more comfortable than trying to use two hands on a tablet. If you're really keen to stay productive, you might consider a voice recognition app, such as Drag and Dictate on the iPhone. Of course, at this point, I'd question whether you've failed to grasp the basic concept of relaxing on your day off. Even if you're just reading or watching a movie in your hammock, you might discover that a 3-to-4-inch screen suffices once you become engrossed in the content. In terms of reading, you'll probably find a smartphone less cumbersome than a tablet, physical newspaper or magazine. Unfortunately, a lot of the best reading apps are restricted to tablets, which is one of the reasons why I'm so fond of the form factor agnostic Xenio. If you do your homework before climbing in, the view from the hammock can be pretty good.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And you obviously need something to play games on, so you can take your portal to the hammock too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
You've got to get yourself set up, don't you?
Yeah, I have a hammock
down the backyard. Preparation and planning.
Yeah? Yeah, no, I traditionally don't take tech to the hammock because you want to escape from it down there. So obviously I think if you're taking tech to the hammock, there's an issue. Don't you agree?
It's the wrong time of year for hammocks, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. Well, in our part of the world, it is.
You see, sure. In the right time of the year for a hammock, you would take the
pina colada. The coldie.
No, you'd take your AM radio to listen to the cricket.
You would.
Oh, that would be what you'd do in your hammock.
How romantic. AM radio. Isn't it a great medium? Yeah.
Wouldn't you, of all people, take your DAB Plus radio?
The homemade one.
To listen to the cricket.
It's homemade. A component one for inside. It's not a hammock one.
It's not portable.
Get the commentators in stereo.
Well, no.
No? What's the point of digital radio then? It's mono, is it?
I don't know. I doubt that the commentators are in stereo, even if the transmission is.
Okay, cool. Did you know there's 1,000 days left for Windows XP support? Did you care?
1,000 days? That's a long time. It's nearly 3 years.
Yeah, I'm not worried.
3 years. That's right. But XP is days numbered. But then again, so is everything else, really, isn't it? So... Microsoft has begun the countdown to the last 1,000 days of support remaining for the aging stalwart Windows XP. So, as it's going to start rolling out Windows 8 shortly. That looks like an interesting... Have you had a look at the Windows GUI on that, Graham? The Windows 8 GUI?
I saw that there was a video out a few weeks ago that we talked about on the show that, yeah, it was... Windows turns your PC into a smartphone.
Was
that the one? Yeah.
It's really iPhone 7 for the PC. I've got something here on it. Oh, here we go. Windows 8 works on all Windows 7 PCs, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen this or heard anything, but according to those in the know, Microsoft is pledging that the minimum system requirements for Windows 8 will be the same or even lower than those of Windows 7, which begs the question, have they learned from their Vista days? Remember how Vista, you had to go the complete opposite? You had to buy a new machine to actually run the operating system.
Well, even then it didn't work.
I've blocked it out of my mind.
Yeah. Well, you would.
Even if I was a Windows person.
Everybody has blocked Vista out of their mind. That's all right. Vista didn't work.
No.
On anything.
No. It didn't, really, did it? It's funny, actually, because I've actually got the discs at work and I've never loaded them.
Smart man.
Yeah, well, everyone did the downgrade. Is there many XPs out there, systems still?
Yes, lots and lots in corporate and business environments. Yes, gazillions of them.
Yeah, well, since the fiasco over Windows Vista system requirements ending in an embarrassing lawsuit, Microsoft has avoided raising the bar with successive operating systems. So Windows 7 had the same minimum system requirements as Vista, and now Microsoft has promised to follow suit with the forthcoming operating system, Windows 8. Now, if you haven't had a look, there's plenty of stuff out there on the net. You can go and check out Windows 8.
Well, it should run even faster, given that it's only a smartphone interface.
Well, you would think, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You would think.
I mean, if it'll run on an iPhone, surely it'll run on a PC.
Yeah. Anyway, you've got 1,000 days left of support for XP. Now, I think that means service packs. The software giant would stop supplying security patches and hot fixes for all versions of the 11-year-old operating system on April 8th, 2014. Set your clocks. Set your watches.
Yep. Your time starts.
We could be up to now, Windows 9 by then.
They do keep pushing that date back, though. So
yeah, they do. It's very, very rubbery, isn't it?
They they're very keen to end support, but they're not very keen to lose the
customer base.
The customer base.
Oh, really?
Because I mean, system administrators in the business world are a conservative bunch, a very conservative bunch.
Oh yeah, it's just look at state governments and things like that.
Oh well, yeah, but some of them are just insane / incompetent, but.
I'm not going to throw stones now.
Or
moon rocks.
Moon rocks?
It's in the chat.
Oh, sorry.
It's kind of a link.
I see. Yeah. No, well, you can take things to an extreme, but there's lots of Windows XP out there in that sort of environment, and very loath to move. But it's starting to happen, and you are starting to see people move towards Windows 7. And I think it's a good thing. There's lots of big advantages in 7.
Mm. I've got no problems with it. Works well.
Mm.
Very stable. I've only had one blue screen of death, and that was on my little netbook. Don't know what happened there, but only one.
That's all right.
Only one. Yeah.
If you were following my tweets during the week, you might have seen a family friend's computer that I was asked to perform some bit of TLC on.
I did
on.
See that. I think I was watching it on G+.
Mm, did you get chest pain when you opened up the images?
It was blue. I had to study it and go, oh, my God. Blast from the past.
Yes, it was a Windows 98 machine. Oh, they said it was running a little bit slow. Could I have a look at it, please?
Mm.
And I had a look at it and...
It's a 13-year-old operating system.
Please tell me it wasn't connected to the internet.
It wasn't connected to the
internet.
Do you
remember, back in those days when you had drivers? You had to load a driver for everything?
I needed to load drivers.
Yeah, but it does it for you these days, I found.
Yes.
But back then, no.
No.
My solution was
to load a driver for a mouse. Sorry, I keep talking over you, Dr. Ron.
To remove all of the person's data from their My Documents folders. And I said, look, we've got a hard rubbish collection coming up in a couple of weeks. What we'll do is we'll put it out on the nature strip and we'll get you a new computer.
Just F-disk it.
And we'll get all of the personal data.
Stuff back
out. That's
it.
Right. We'll get all the personal data off the system because they had family photographs there and documents and things and such things.
You've got to save all that stuff first.
Got to save all that first. So I thought, well, I didn't really want to put it on the network. And I tried to put it on the network and it said... But didn't understand what the Windows network was. Because remember back in Windows 98, they had, there was no proper logon process. You had to install Microsoft networking logon or... was back in the days if you could have the Novell networking logon or all this other stuff at the start. So I didn't understand about the network when I plugged the network cable in.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming back to me. Can we stop this now? This is becoming a nightmare.
It's like a bad dream, isn't it?
It is.
So I thought, I'll put everything on
from this.
I'm gonna make a suggestion. To get the data off a disk like that,
be serious.
What you need is a little toy.
Yep.
It's a very handy little toy. It's got a USB connector on one end.
Yep.
Well, you need a driver.
And No, because it plugs into your Windows 7 machine or your Windows XP machine.
Okay.
And any machine. It'll plug into your Mac creature if you've got one of those. It's got a USB connector on one end, and on the other end, it's got a 3.5-inch IDE connector and a 2.5-inch IDE connector and a SATA
connector.
What's
an IDE connector?
It's the type of connector that hard drives use for their data in the old days before they invented SATA, which is the new one that they use now.
Okay, so what you're proposing is to just plug...
So you can take the hard disk out of the computer, plug it onto this cable, plug the USB cable into your computer, and then copy all the data
and
off
copy
it.
Away. So it just looks like
what
an external drive.
That's a really good idea.
Where can I buy this sort of a device? eBay or computer stores?
The swap meets, usually someone has them. You can
what
get
are they
them.
Called? Do they go by a name of sorts, or is it just a USB hard drive
IDE / SATA to USB adapter.
Oh, okay. So they do have real names.
Mm.
That'd be good for data recovery too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Perfect.
Multitude of sins.
Yeah. So if your Windows won't boot on your system, you take the hard disk out, plug it in using this device to another system, and copy your vital photographs or whatever it is, or videos, or just documents off it. Yeah.
What I ended up doing was copying everything to USB, but I had the unfortunate experience first of plugging the USB stick in, and Windows said, "Oh, it looks like you've inserted a USB device. Please put the driver disk in for this device into the drive A, the floppy disk drive, and install the drivers for it."
No, you're chasing down the wrong path. You're doing maintenance work on something you're going to throw out.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not worth your time.
Okay.
I got all the data off, though, and I'm...
Oh, well,
I'm
well pleased, done. So you achieved the aim.
I achieved
so
the aim.
That's the important thing.
And I'm pleased to say it's now sitting on the nature strip.
There is a hard rubbish collection this weekend, so you've done well, that man.
Now, you did also do a secure erase on the hard disk before you put the hard disk out in the nature strip?
No, I kept the hard disk.
You kept the hard disk.
Chucked it on the, in the bookshelf.
Okay, in the Doctor on hard disk collection.
Correct.
There are utilities online you can download for people in this situation. Don't put your computer out on the nature strip or into the tip or into anywhere without securely erasing the content on the hard disk,
yep.
because that will have a lot of information there that people can use to steal your identity.
I find the best way to erase them is a crowbar.
You could physically damage it. It's probably still better, even if you are going to physically damage it, to also do an erase first.
Oh, yes, but who in their right mind is going to be scourging through the tip going, oh, there's a hard drive. It's smashed, but I reckon I can get it to work.
It's not hard to boot up the secure erase software and just run it before you...
No, you're right.
Yeah,
you're
like right. That scene
seriously,
from Office Space where they're taking it to the printer with a cricket bat or a baseball bat and they're taking out all their aggression on the tech. Just do that with your hard drive.
If you are slightly geeky, it is, of course, worth getting a set of the fancy screwdriver tips to and pull the hard drive apart to see how it does work inside because it's fascinating.
I've never done that.
Seriously?
I've never done that. No.
Andrew.
Sorry.
You've never taken the lid off a hard drive?
No, I've seen pictures of it, so I don't need to.
I'm bringing one into the studio next week. We're going to take one apart on there.
I may need a portable Nerd Alert on my phone.
Yeah, I think we'll lock and load Nerd Alerts everywhere, I think, next week. Hey, also in other news this week too, the ACMA, Australian Communications and Media Authority, remember the inquiry they had into dodgy telcos and how everyone was dissatisfied and all that sort of stuff and we were going to get supermarket pricing and the likes on our mobile phone things? You know, it all blew up, I think, about a month or so back. Well, they've released a PDF which has their... The Need for Change, I think they've called it, which you can find online. And in just a paragraph of it, it says, customer service, consumers are generally satisfied with the quality and service reliability of the telecommunication services.
Generally, they're
happy with what they're getting. But there's an increasing demand for faster services with more functionality and greater capacity, which is really just the evolution of technology. And for the most part, the industry, the telco industry, is meeting those demands. However, this juxtapose raises an important question. Why is the quality of customer care being provided by telecommunications companies failing to meet consumers' expectations when the services that they provide generally do? So the ACMA is drawing a...
Controversial answer, because this is what consumers have paid for. Consumers have chosen lower pricing over good customer service.
But that's market forces. That's just the way it works.
No, that's consumers making a choice. They've chosen to go with someone who's providing a cheaper service rather than someone who's providing a service that's got good customer service.
And when you mean good customer service, do you mean someone like a local telco with local support? Or do you mean people that give you the right answers for the right problems or what?
Someone you can ring and talk to on the phone will help you solve a problem.
Oh, so there's not that many people around?
No. Particularly, the cheaper the ISP is, the less likely you're going to be able to get someone on the phone who's knowledgeable, who can help you solve a problem.
But would you also not say that the problem is potentially unsolvable anyway?
No.
So most problems can be solved easily on the phone in one tech support type sort of call,
reckon? More problems can be solved if you've got someone on the phone who can try and help you than if you've only got...
Take Vodafone, for example.
Yeah, well...
I can't make a call. And they'll go, do they either A, lie through the teeth saying, oh, it must be your phone or your service, or do they B, admit that there's a problem with the network and...
Well, that's a different problem because there is a serious problem with the network.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is the
but
difference
should they
between...
Lie? This is the customer
service. No, they shouldn't. What I'm talking about is the difference between where they're providing a similar service, but the main difference is that they don't have the staff to back up when you're in the office. Because people are more expensive than equipment and configurations and bandwidth. The technical stuff's not as expensive as having an actual person there to answer your phone call when you've got a problem.
Mm.
So you find that the people, the knowledgeable technical help are the first people to go when the prices are being cut. So if you choose the very cheapest ISP you can find, you are choosing price over customer service, and that's what I'm saying.
No, that's very true. Valid point.
Talk to other people. Go with an ISP where you can actually get onto someone to get some help if you've got a problem. And be prepared to pay a few bucks more to get a better service.
Hmm. Well, I guess, yes, buy beware when it comes to those sort of things, really, isn't it? If you pay for... Because Telstra always had a good name in respect to the network was always better.
Yeah.
You paid a bit more
for
it.
Well, Telstra had the opposite problem. Telstra had customer service problems just because they're too big. And so no one part of Telstra knows what any other part of Telstra is doing. And there's no. It's very hard to provide effective customer support in an environment like Telstra, in a very big organisation like that.
Yeah, I agree. It's entirely unmanageable because of the sheer size of the organisation.
That's right, yeah.
And then on the other end of that scale, you've got oversold networks and people trying to sell bandwidth and, you know...
And who've got slots. No one to answer the phones. Yeah, yeah. When the phone rings, it goes to voicemail and yeah, there's no... You know, or to a four-hour wait in a queue.
Yes, and that's when people make websites and blog about things and do stuff when they're on hold to telecommunications companies. So, look, it'd be interesting to see what comes out because the inquiry hasn't finished and you can have a bit of a read. There's about a 50-page document up there on the ACMA website at the moment outlining where they're at and what's going to happen. I look forward to seeing the supermarket pricing coming out on mobile phone
that will
plans.
Be good.
I think that's going to be a bit of an eye-opener and people are going to go, oh, my God, did they really?
I was in the supermarket today and I saw some prepaid SIM cards on sale and it was all just meaningless, the pricing. It's like, oh, you get $895 value for $25.
That's just ridiculous.
$25 value for $25. Yes. That's the money you're paying. And maybe you do it if they charge you, assume you're being charged at $10.50 a minute or something. But
yeah, that would only work if there was a standard rate that everyone used.
Exactly, and there isn't.
But there isn't.
So it is meaningless, as you say.
Absolutely, completely meaningless. Mm.
Now, just on another thing, your beloved is overseas at the moment. What telecommunications set up did you send her over? She's gone to the warmer summer climates of...
She has. She's in England at the moment.
Yep.
And we bought a test prepaid SIM here before she left, just to make sure...
$2 one from the supermarket.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yep. Just to make sure that when her carrier said that her phone was unlocked, it was actually, in fact, unlocked. So we put a SIM card in from another carrier, and it was unlocked. So that gave us a level of confidence. So she went over there, and she has purchased a SIM card over there from, I'm trying to remember the name of the carrier she went with. It might have been Orange. I'm not sure. But she just got a good deal on some data. I think she was getting, I'll find out for you and let you know next week. She was getting 2 gig or 3 gig of data for like £5 or something, just to use it within a month.
Well, that should be fairly straightforward. Social networking does that.
Yes, that's right. And she's only going to be using it for social networking and for data. She's not going to be making any calls on it. So. But she has got a lot of voice minutes to use up as well if she wants to.
Cool. And how's the, speaking of voice, are you Skyping?
We are Skyping.
What's the choice of communication verbally?
It's been Skype so far. And I've got to say that in the past I've been very critical of Skype, especially when they brought out that stupid... crippled, unusable Skype Lite beta, which everyone rolled out on their Android phones, and that was really dumb. But Skype has redeemed themselves, and they've now got the new Skype clients for the Android
handset. Oh, really?
Handset.
I must have another look at it.
It's a real Skype client, and it works really well. And I think I was in the office the other day, and I was logged into Skype, and the phone just started ringing, and I was able to talk to Mrs. Doctor on via Skype. She was on a computer in England.
Yep.
I was on the HTC handset here, just over NextG.
Very good.
And using NextG data.
That was going to be my next question, because the telcos traditionally find that as a threat to their revenue stream. So well, they've obviously allowed you to do that.
They have NextG to their credit, or Telstra to their credit, are allowing people to do that. And the call just found its way over the network onto my handset.
It rang
like a normal phone. I thought, that's a funny ring my phone's making. I picked it up and I just had Mrs. Dr. On's calling on Skype. So I pressed answer and I could talk to her.
Just like a phone.
See, and I was walking around the office.
That's where it wins.
Yeah, if you ask me. No, it was very impressive. It's very good. But we've had some fairly crappy calls too when we've had to hang up and redial.
Yeah, I've always found that Skype, if it's going to get better, it does in the first 30 seconds. Otherwise, you terminate it and go again.
Try again, and usually it finds a good path.
Yeah. All right, we've got the Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up very shortly. Just a couple more things, just briefly before we go to those. I was reading this in the news before I came up tonight and had a bit of a laugh. New Zealand ISPs win a $25 copyright charge. Now, I don't know whether you've heard about this.
No.
Internet service providers in New Zealand will be allowed to charge right holders $25 New Zealand, which equates to $19.50 Australian for those counting, to process a copyright infringement notice levelled against an end user.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. I'm starting to like this.
Yeah, I thought you might. Anyway, the Minister of Commerce, Mr. Simon Powell, said that the fee was a cost-effective option available to rights holders compared to enforcing copyright throughout the courts. He also said the fee was leveled, was at a level that prevented rights holders from inundating ISPs with alleged copyright infringement notices.
And therefore their end users, yes.
Correct. And has taken place in the countries that it is similar regime. So
let's explain this. If a copyright holder detects an infringement...
Yeah, rather than just sending out verbose...
Firing off 100,000, you know, infringement notices through the ISP, the ISP says, well, we'll pass them on, but... We're going to charge you $25 administration fee or whatever. Well, that's fair enough.
Don't you think that's a good idea? I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought that was really quite clever.
As long as the notice still has no actual effect in law.
Well, yes. One of those notices that says, stop it, we know who you are. And they hope that the fear and intimidation of that will make people cease.
Yeah. And it's fair enough that the that they should be able to pass on that, charge a fee, pass on the message to the end user, but then the ISP shouldn't then be compelled to take any action against that end user, because that's not their job. It's the job of the courts and
the copyright holder.
And the copyright holder to take the end user to court.
Yes. All goes back to safe harbouring, really, doesn't it? And who's responsible for what on networks?
Yes.
And telco companies, shouldn't be.
No.
All right, and finally this evening, on tonight's Tech Talk, Apple blocks the latest iOS jailbreaks. Now, have anyone here got a jailbroken phone that they're using?
We had one with the screen that was broken.
That wasn't a jailbroken. That was a physically dropped on its corner, a broken, smashed bit of glass.
That wasn't dropped. It just spontaneously cracked.
It did. It went ping like that.
Oh, that's right. It did too, because you took it back, didn't you?
Storm.
I did. Yes.
And he said, that spontaneously cracked on you, didn't it? And you go, no.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And he winked at me.
Did he?
He just liked you. Just spontaneously combusted, didn't it?
Did he smile at you knowingly?
Yes, he did, and tapped his nose.
Ah, good.
No.
Anyway, Apple has plugged a hole in the software that runs iPhones, iPads, iPod Touch music players that could be used to jailbreak the devices. The exploit came to light 9 days ago, where jailbreakme.com released exploits that Apple customers could use.
Jailbreakme.com? Yep. Is there such a site?
They're out there everywhere. It's red snow, black snow, green snow, you name it. Probably yellow snow. All sorts of things
You had to go that, just a little bit too far, didn't you?
Some Apple customers have
chosen... There's always one.
Yep, there is always one.
Yeah. Google Plus.
Don't eat yellow snow.
No, don't. It's not good for you.
No.
Some Apple customers chose to jailbreak their devices so they could download and run applications that were not approved by Apple, or use iPhones on networks of carriers that were not approved by Apple. So if you wanted to get out of the running your life the way Apple tells you to, that's the option to have it jailbroken. And anyway, so this jailbreak code that's doing the rounds, there's an exploit which has been found, and a vulnerability in iOS that had not previously been disclosed. So be careful if you jailbreak your devices. Be sure to change the root password of your Apple device. Otherwise, it used to be Alpine. Is it still Alpine? Says he, looking at Lena, who has
it. I have no idea. I didn't jailbreak my phone.
Oh, okay.
I thought
No, that's right. You just dropped it.
I just cracked the screen.
I haven't even jailbroken my Android phone.
No, you don't jailbreak them. You root them.
You root them. Yeah. Yeah.
I've rooted mine.
Why?
Why? It stops the ads popping up. You can put ad blockers on now. And so when you play things like Angry Birds with an annoying thing that puts an ad right over the top where you want to lob a pig.
A bird, sorry.
That's what you've been doing wrong all this time.
Lob a bird.
You've been throwing pigs at birds.
Yeah, actually.
Should be angry pigs.
Angry pigs. Well, there's a market. Yes, it stops those ads popping up over the top where you're trying to do things. And that's the reason why. And also...
I reckon they should just bring out a paid version of it to remove the ads. You know, pay $2.50 and remove the
Apple
ads.
On the app,
yeah, that's right.
But they don't on Android. But anyway, $2.
I'd be happy to pay the $2. I'd rather than jailbreak my phone and load ad blocker. I'd pay them $2.50 for the app.
Yeah. Well, it's that sort of model, isn't it? Where you wouldn't think twice of $2.50 if you're getting a lot of enjoyment out of something.
That's true. Well, you shouldn't.
About time developers made a bit of a living on the Android App Store.
Yeah. Well, I've believed this for a long time. Yeah, people who write little apps. That the sorts of things used to be shareware on the PC and so on. Hmm. Yeah,
shareware. There's a concept.
Yeah, you should if you use one of those apps, you click on the little donate button and give them $20 or whatever it is.
Throw them a couple of bucks.
Yeah,
everyone's a winner.
Yeah,
all good.
Better than paying someone like Microsoft $1,000 for the same thing.
I'm moving on to Adobe.
They know how to charge.
Oh,
wounded like Mally Bulls. Yeah, yeah,
wounded bull material. Yeah, absolutely. All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. It's Spot Gadget. Website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This is breakfast radio in some parts of the world.
He wanted to ring the police, but he wanted to do so anonymously.
Speaking of Qantas, it's
what, you shoot special. Yourself in the face?
You shoot yourself in the face.
Dr. Ron, have you cyber squatted?
There are free tools to do most of these things.
I usually enjoy your podcast.
Oh, because the old iPad's just
that's
like...
That's what the iPad's for.
Entertaining.
Put your fingers in the ears. La, 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 la.
Informative.
The consumer is the winner.
Independent.
You've got to find the sweet spot.
While listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Interesting! Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
For those of us lucky enough to own a PlayStation 3 games console, Sony has developed...
Is that what you call it?
The Move. The PlayStation Move motion controller is Sony's answer to the Wii Remote or the Xbox Kinect.
Really?
Use the controller in conjunction with the PlayStation Eye camera for what Sony calls genuine augmented reality experiences. As you control your actions with your voice as well as your body, T3 magazine says with feats of HD and 3D, I think there should be heaps, I was typing quickly, of HD and 3D games, it's the only way to waggle in 2011. You can buy a starter
waggle?
Pack. Yeah, I think so.
Waggle. Yep.
Waggle, waggle, waggle.
You know when you shake the Wiimote? That's waggle.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You can buy a starter pack, which includes one PlayStation Move motion controller and a PlayStation Eye camera and a Blu-ray disc sampler.
I thought they were going to use in earthquake areas.
Well, no, if you're not in an earthquake-prone area.
Waggle's an earthquake? You know?
Yes.
It's just gameplay.
The starter pack's available for just $99.95 RRP.
Really?
For more information,
that's
go
about
to
half the price of the Kinect, isn't it? That's about $170, $185.
It's got a glowing orb thing.
Yeah. It does have a glowing orb.
What do you know of it? Lena, any good?
The Kinect has no controller. The Move has a controller, just like the Wii.
So, oh, okay. So you've got to hold it in your hand like the Wii does.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's a bit less responsive as well, but yes.
So does it lag? Because there's nothing worse than lagging. Oh, you know, you shake it and it takes a minute for it to cotton on that you've shaken it.
Depends on the game, I think. Okay. Yeah, they're pretty good.
That's a gadget, Andrew.
Oh, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, Sony's PlayStation 3 Move.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website, MediaGazer.com. Get all your must-read media news on one page. This is a sister site to popular tech news blog TechMeme, which is run in part by our US correspondent and longtime friend, Lydia Davis.
Yeah.
Mad Lid. Media Gazer is a news aggregation site that presents the day's must-read media news on a single page. Aggregation technologies with direct editorial input from knowledgeable human editors presents an indispensable narrative of an industry in transition.
Knowledgeable human editors.
Knowledgeable human editors, not just the normal human editors.
No.
Knowledgeable
what
ones.
What a concept.
That's our website, Andrew. Oh. www.mediagazer.com.
Oh, very good.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
I've got this one this week. During the course of the week, I had I was walking down the street at work, down to getting coffee in the morning, as you do, and we were discussing property prices, as you do, about houses in the general vicinity of where we work. And to my colleague at the time, I sort of said, you know, you can find out how much that house is worth over there and how much it's sold for. And at auction, once it sells, it's worth.
You go and buy the paper the next week and you look up the property prices.
You get onto your iPhone and you go to the Commonwealth Bank's little section that they have in the app store there, and you download the Commonwealth Bank's property guide on the iPhone. Now, this is a really good app because what you do... Forget about it if you don't have it's only an iPhone app.
That's okay. That's all right.
What you do is you download it and you stick it in your iPhone and then you walk around the street with the camera in your iPhone pointing it at properties.
Are you serious?
And it puts up on the screen what it was worth, what it is now, and what it sold for auction just by pointing the camera at the property. And I've sort of been using it for a while.
What if there's a tree in the way?
It's like Superman. It sees through trees.
To move the tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's really good. And, of course, it's got all the auction results from previous weekends. It's got all the means of neighbourhoods and all that sort of stuff. That's the average prices, the low prices. But if you're wondering, if you go past a board on a house,
You can actually, and it was sold recently, you just point the camera at it and push the button on the icon. It puts a little button on the screen and you click that button and it'll give you details about the house, what it's sold for and the likes.
Sounds
links
cool.
you to through to the real estate agent's website too, I think. I haven't tried that one, but I'm pretty sure it does that as well.
The Commonwealth Bank has got a special webpage there, which I'll put in the show notes, and there's a little movie, a little online video to show you how it works. That's very clever.
It is a very clever app. So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio iPhone app of the week. So if you're out with your iPhone looking for property, you need this in your device. It'll sounds help you good. Buy your next house.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Israelis are cheesed off.
Who's Israeli?
Israelis.
Oh, Israelis.
Oh, those people,
Israeli.
People who live in Israel.
In Israel. They're turning to Facebook to spread the word. More than 75,000 people have joined a Facebook group in the last few weeks, vowing to boycott cottage cheese, a staple of the Israeli diet, until prices have come down. Cottage cheese is a beloved staple, and the consumer boycott has touched a nerve among Israelis concerned about rising prices and eroding salaries. The Facebook group is calling for a month-long boycott of the product.
No cheese for you.
Starting on the 1st of July. No cottage cheese for you. It could all mean a tub of trouble for the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has seen food prices
very
rise
well pronounced
3.6% so far this year.
George Tanikin spends hours trying to pronounce those names. Does he just rolled off your tongue just like that.
That's what I do.
Have you got a gift of tongue too, like Brian has at the office?
Yeah, it's another story.
He can speak French.
The price of cottage cheese has rocketed up 39% since 2008. According to the financial daily The Marker, a 250-gram container is now sold in many supermarkets for close to 8 shekels.
Did you know that Sydney and Melbourne are the 6th and 7th most expensive city in the world to live in? And these people in Israel are having a problem with their cheese?
They're having to use Facebook to boycott cottage cheese.
Only on Tech Talk Radio.
The Facebook page of the cottage cheese boycott identifies organisers as regular Israelis who work for a living, are raising families and bowing under the weight of the cost of living in Israel.
I'd bow. Wonder where it comes in on the chart. I must have a look.
Now, I saw that chart and London was below Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
Our milk's very expensive.
I would
so is the bread.
Question the accuracy
really?
Of that
Not
chart.
To mention the petrol. Oh, no, it's by a reputable organisation.
Really?
Yeah.
How well, could Melbourne be a more expensive place to live than London?
What chart are we talking about now?
Oh, there was a chart that came out in the press. Just Google it.
It was on the internet. It's true.
Yeah.
It's
true. Okay. Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Tech Talk Radio for this week. We'll come back and we'll do it all again next week. So thank you for everybody who's been in the chat tonight. There's a lot of people there tonight.
I'd never used cottage cheese and Facebook in the same sentence before up until this week.
No. It's first for everything, really, on this show, isn't it? Anyway, until next week, thank you, Lena. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Graham.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. I mean, get that, you know, get the stats up on Twitter.
Oh, Twitter thing, yes.
Tweet.
Yeah, and you guys have Portal.
You guys have got homework?
Yep.
Portal 1.
Portal 1.
And only goes up to 15 levels or something.
Bye for now. I'm going to pull the faders down. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellist Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Guest panellist is Justin Dunlop. Expert opinion by Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and the world that rebroadcast the show. And a reminder that Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. And don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk chat, and solve your tech issues in the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws, and may not be rebroadcast without approval.